Welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling as it appears on the NBC Universal streaming service Peacock, as well as internationally on the WWE Network. My name is Mike Sempervivi. Before we begin today's voyage, I'd just like to note we have social media on several platforms. Our Twitter is the most active, but we have a Facebook page and more. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us but don't have access to Peacock or the network, you can still do so by heading over to the mighty MidAtlanticGateway.com and checking out David Taub's reviews of these classic shows. We'd also appreciate you heading over to YouTube.com/MidAtlanticPod, where you can find full podcasts, truncated versions of classic episodes, plus special audio and video clips exclusive to our page and often with the great assistance of the mighty Mid-Atlantic Gateway website. Go to YouTube.com/MidAtlanticPod and please subscribe, watch, and like the videos. It would be doing us a great service. Now with all that out of the way, today in episode 44, we take a look at the television that was taped on Wednesday, November 24th, 1982 at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and began airing in local markets that weekend of Saturday, November 27th. I'd like to bring in my co-host Roman Gomez right now. Roman, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike, and boy, do we have an exciting episode to talk about this week on the Mid-Atlantic Podcast.
Oh, yeah, and even though it was November in 1982, we've got a hot open for the show. Once again, as Mike Rotundo is in the ring with Big Rick Harris. Harris is the son of former wrestler and manager George Two-Ton Harris, who at this time was working as a groundskeeper for the Charlotte Orioles in Crockett Park. The younger Harris would go on to greater acclaim later as Black Bart. A referee for the day is Stu Schwartz, and joining Bob Caudle at the commentary desk is Rowdy Roddy Piper. And as par for the course, when we have a match joined in progress to start the show, it only goes 30 seconds, and Harris went to Irish whip Rotundo into the corner, but it was reversed, and when Harris came back, Rotundo lifted him up in the airplane spin, which led to the pin. So, Roman, that was that, and we have another 30-second beginning for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, joined in progress, and Rotundo got the victory over Black Bart, who world class would tell you he was a world heavyweight champion, although that was that's up for debate and another time, another place.
You know, this young guy we've been watching here, this Ricky Rudd, who of course would go on to be Ravishing Rick Rude. I believe it was during his reign as the Texas heavyweight champion, or the American heavyweight champion.
American.
I think it was. Yeah.
Yep.
That they pulled out of the NWA, and Rick Rude, managed by Percival Pringle, ended up becoming a world champion, which did not go over well in the After magazine, certainly from what I remember. But after this match, Rotundo then joined Caudle over at the commentary desk, said he's still got Leroy Brown on his mind, and he's going through an education process right now, and he won't be satisfied until he gets a victory over the big man. And when he stepped away, the show went to break, and when we got back, one half of the World Tag Team Champions, Sergeant Slaughter, joined Bob. Last week, we saw the videotape of Jay Youngblood being injured by Slaughter and Don Kernoodle in Charlotte on November 12th, as Ricky Steamboat gave his thoughts on the ordeal. Well, equal time is given as Slaughter gives Bob his perspective on what went down. And folks, this is a long one, but it's a very, very good one, so settle in.
Fans here with us right now, one half of the World Tag Team Champions, Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant?
Well, I'm out here to interview. You're here to interview me about a tape, a VTR of some sort of a match that's going to be shown.
What a match.
Against Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, my partner. Right here, as you can see, Don Kernoodle. Here we whipped Ricky Steamboat and gave him a double dose of his own medicine, because before this had happened, he had been cheating. Here you can see his partner across the ring. No reason to be in that ring.
Sergeant, that's two of you on one. Don Kernoodle and Sergeant Slaughter, look, outside of the ring, here you are, you're attacking Steamboat even while you're outside the
That's
ring.
That's right. Just like I said, he's getting a dose of his own medicine. They're not showing you what happened before this. You can see he's hurt. We're a tag team. Anytime you're on a tag team match, it's hard for the referee, but he did very good. I thought he did an excellent job of controlling the match. You can see how much control he was in. See, here comes Jay Youngblood again. Again, he's in the ring when he shouldn't be in the ring.
Oh, yeah, but right here, his partner looks like he really needs some help. You guys, You've got him hurt, you've got him down, you've worked him over, and you just continue and just don't kick away at him, do anything you could to him.
Well, that's the name of the game is wrestling. And that's what we're doing, wrestling. And you can see he's not to be on this corner of the ring. He's, see, look at this. I think Jay Youngblood tripped him there. That's why I kicked Ricky Steamboat one more time. Because I felt that Jay Youngblood had tripped my partner right there. And he has no reason to be over on that side of the ring. It's not his side of the ring there.
Well, he's over there trying to help his partner up, of course. Get him up off the floor, get him back in the ring.
I was trying to help Ricky Steamboat into the ring, and Jay Youngblood kept chasing me around the ring. So you can see him right there.
Sergeant, let me ask you this. You and Don Canoto, World Tag Team Champions, and of course you're very proud of those belts. And don't you think you ought to wear them like champions and you ought to act like champions in that ring?
We're the best champions there are. We're the best champions there ever were. As you can see, my partner there, open hand to the face. I'm still trying to help Ricky Steamboat into the ring. He just won't get in the ring. I'm telling him what a coward he is there. Told him to get into the ring and wrestle like a man so that we can wear the belts like you want us to, as men, as wrestlers, as champions. And here you can see
he's going to bring him. Hey, he's got him in here for the suplex. Look at Steamboat go behind him right there with a tremendous move.
He finally made one good move in the match, I have to say that. But here's where it all happened. As you can see, they're both knocked down, both trying to get to their partners. Don Canoto's trying to get to me. Ricky Steamboat's crawling to his partner, Jay Youngblood. You can see I'm helping him. I'm trying to get him to tag me because I know we'd have a match as soon as he tagged me. And this is where it all happened for Jay Youngblood. This is what got Jay Youngblood hurt by hitting me right there. He had no reason to come across that ring and hit Sergeant Slaughter. You'll see.
What a young man right here.
These are illegal chaps. If you ask me, that's like just like a heart punch. To me, that's just like a heart punch. He chops you into the chest. And I told myself on the apron right there that when I got into that ring, if I did, Jay Youngblood was going to get hurt.
All right, and here you are coming
right
there.
See how he threw me right into the ring post? The camera didn't see it. He threw me into the ring post, and both of them gang up on me like you're true champions, like you say. Look how they threw me bodily into the turnbuckle. I didn't see a tag there at all. Wait. At this point, I felt that Jay Youngblood was supposed to be the man in the ring there.
This is Rick Steamboat, and
right
he
now, watch him grab my tights here. Watch him grab my tights. Had no way I could get out of that with him grabbing my tights. But I still had it in my mind, even though I was hurt here, that I was going to get Jay Youngblood somehow.
All right, there's the tag.
Now, you'll see over right here. You watch the referee's count. There's my foot over the first rope before the three count. Now, the referee realizes it now. And at this point, you'll see that he decided to continue the match. He told them they are not the World Tag Team Champions, that my foot is on the rope. He said, continue the match. And you saw Don Canoto who was standing there. He heard it. I heard him say, continue the match. So we continue the match.
Well, and the referee went down, too, with Steamboat. Now, here is Youngblood, Sergeant Slaughter and Jay Youngblood right now.
That's right. I didn't know what had happened at this point. I was just, when I heard the referee say continue, I was wrestling.
All right, now here comes Don Canoto back.
That's right. Now, he told me that the match was still on. Right here you can see. I told him, I gave him instructions here, that we should keep the match going like we are as true champions. And that's a true champion display right there, like you want us to be, Bob Cottle, and all the wrestling maggots around here want us to be. I told him right there to hold him up. I've been working on this for many, many years, and Jay Youngblood, you're going to be the first one I've ever used it on. And you'll see right there, I didn't even care about my own partner right there. I just wanted to hurt him bad. And because of Don Cornello's shape and the way he's in condition, he got up. You don't see Jay Youngblood getting up there. And we just add a little extra right there. The Cobra Clutch that nobody has ever gotten out of. Nobody ever will get out of. The referee said, okay, he's giving up. I said, he hasn't given up. I didn't hear him say, I give up. Now, I don't know where his partner is. If I was his partner, I'd be in there helping him. Now, where is his partner, the so-called great wrestler? Right here. It's so brutal. Look, they had to censor it. What was going on there was so brutal, they couldn't show it on television. But I'll tell you what. J. Jay Youngblood's going to be out for some time. I understand that Ricky Steamboat has canceled every match that he's had here so that he could be at Jay Youngblood's side because he's very hurt. He's hurt bad. And you know what's going to happen? I hear that Ricky Steamboat's going to retire if Jay Youngblood cannot wrestle as a tag team again. So I guess that's it for you, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood.
There we hear from Sergeant Slaughter giving his side of the story on what went down on November 12th. He and Crew Noodles' match with Steamboat and Youngblood just disintegrating into pure chaos, Roman. And I know that was a little bit of a long one and tough for people who don't get a chance to go back and check out what happened on Peacock. But hey, at least get a little bit of a flavor on what was taking place in the ring. Sarge not being too descriptive there when the censored screen went up as far as how brutal that was, what the people couldn't see. He didn't let us know what it was. What it was him having Youngblood in the Cobra Clutch and Don Kernoodle lifting his legs up and those guys putting them down on the mat. Of course, Steamboat and Youngblood, for real, we're over with Dory Funk Jr. in Japan getting ready for the All Japan Tag World Tag League. So that was going on. Roman, what did you think about Slaughter there? It was a great promo. Here we get Slaughter for about a full six.
Well, he had a lot to say, and those of you that do have the Peacock Network or have this on DVD, it is worth checking out because Slaughter is definitely playing the heel role here on commentary. You know, he's saying things like he kicks Steamboat in the head and then says, well, I was just trying to help him get back in the ring. You know, and there's just certain things he says that it's obvious he's lying because he's playing the heel role. And, you know, the picture's worth a thousand words. You can see what's going on there. And when Youngblood got the hot tag, he came in and attacked Slaughter. And on commentary, Slaughter said, I want revenge. And he ended up getting revenge at the end when he came off the top rope, gave Youngblood the forearm, then put him in the Cobra Clutch. There was a lot of action, and the crowd was into it. And that is one that I wish I was at ringside. It really whets your appetite for the road to Greensboro. And the 6 minutes or so of action they showed, it was exciting.
A good heel always has a justification for why he does something, no matter how ridiculous it is. Like what you mentioned, when Youngblood gets tagged in, and of course he's a house of fire, and puts Kernoodle on the mat and then runs over and punches Slaughter in the head, and that's always a great excuse for a heel to go, I wasn't even doing anything, and he came over here and hit me. So it was, again, a great heel interview for Sergeant Slaughter, for sure.
And what about when Steamboat was hurt and was physically unable to help Youngblood, and then Slaughter's like, well, what kind of partner is he? You know, I would help my partner out, you know, just really burying Steamboat on the commentary.
Oh, yeah, and that would always be something that a heel would use on a set of tag team partners that were already rough, and they go and they knock the guy out on the side of the ring, and there's no one there to make the tag, and that's because your partner didn't care about you. And, man, some of the things in wrestling, I miss them. But back to the show. After we go to break, after that Slaughter interview, we're back in the ring for Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion Paul Jones facing off against Masanobu Fuchi, the future All-Japan Junior Heavyweight ace. And early in the bout, Caudle mentions that later on in the show, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair would be in the studio. Caudle notes Flair wouldn't be wrestling in an actual match, but he'd be offering a glimpse into what one of his wrestling workouts looks like as he faces Keith Larson and Ron Ritchie. And that news piques the interest of Roddy Piper.
In Japan is technique, and after all, the basics are what you learn. And the reason the coach drills those basics in is because they're so important. But obviously, Paul Jones knows them also.
All right, Jones with a wrist. Knees right down into the rib cage, and talking about technique. And talking about drilling fans, something you don't want to miss. A little later in the program, you, I think, will thoroughly enjoy this. He's not going to wrestle on the program, but Roddy, you'll be interested in this also. The world champion, Ric Flair, is here. And while he will not defend his title, he will not wrestle in the ring, he is going to show the fans what he does when he works out. He's going to work out against a couple of men, Keith Larson and Ron Ritchie. And I think that could be very, very informative for the fans.
Well, he's a world champion. I suppose he could show some definite techniques. I'll be kind of anxious to see that myself, you know.
So there we hear a little bit from Roddy Piper, whose interest is piqued by the NWA World Heavyweight Champion being in the area and performing some amateur wrestling moves and seeing how he gets ready for a for a championship match. I'm sure all of this is going to end well, but back to the match with Jones and Fucci. You know, Fucci really held the advantage for the first 2 minutes of the match until he missed a dropkick and Jones took over, and it wasn't a long match, 2 minutes, 38 seconds, and Jones, after he took over, was quickly able to end things and get the Indian Deathlock, but a pretty impressive performance, I thought, here for Fucci in a short period of time, and what really, essentially, to the fans, was a heel versus heel match, since that's how Fucci was introduced, and of course, not being from the States, he already automatically got the foreign menace attached to him, Roman.
Yeah, unless you were Tiger Mask, for the most part, if you came from Japan or a foreign country, like you said, they were the foreign menace, but yeah, it was basically about 3 minutes of action, but it was a pretty good match, despite it not being long. And Fucci did put up a good fight, and he looked good until he succumbed to the Indian Deathlock. But one thing I did like is how Piper put Fucci over in the brief time during the match, you know, saying that the Japanese wrestlers are fundamentally sound. They've got good techniques and whatnot. So it just made the victory seem a little bit more impressive for Paul Jones, the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion.
After the match was over with, donned his cowboy hat, grabbed his Mid-Atlantic Championship belt, and strutted over to the desk. He had some blood on his chest, actually, from the match with Fucci before putting Ric Flair over and burying Dusty Rhodes and Roddy Piper. And at the end of the promo, the audio starts to crackle. So just like the screen always says when this happens, if you watch it on Peacock or the network, this is Jones presented in the most complete form possible due to original production technical difficulties. Actually, it's not the most complete because we're going to join Jones in progress.
You got guys like Dusty Rhodes that runs tremendous around the country.
Wrestler. Tremendous athlete. Great wrestler, Paul.
Would he ever buy you? No. Let me tell you something about Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes is the type of wrestler that travels all around the country. You know, he's like a little kid. He goes out and does damage, and then he runs back to Florida. You know why he stays in Florida? Because the people love him in Florida. That's the only place they love him. He can run back there. They think Dusty Rhodes, they call him the American Dream. Well, if I wanted to pick a dream out of Florida, I would pick somebody like John Studd, a real man. Or Angelo Mosca, another jewel. A beaut. I sure wouldn't pick anybody like Roddy Piper. Turncoat, backstabbing, no good geek. Let me tell you something. I was in Florida one time, and they tried to dictate to me, and I told them what I was going to do, and I threw a belt, the Florida heavyweight belt, I threw it off the bridge. Remember, Florida? And you people in California that are watching now, and you people in Seattle, Washington, you're going to see an awful lot of number one Paul Jones. And we're going to try to get rid of a lot of geeks like Roddy Piper. And I tell you one thing, Ric Flair has joined the crusade. Dusty Rhodes, you better hide in Florida way down in the Everglades, right there on Alligator Alley, any place that you can hide, because you're going to need it.
There we heard from number one, the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, Paul Jones, calling back to a classic championship wrestling from Florida angle from July of 1972, where he threw the Florida Heavyweight Championship belt off the Gandy Bridge in Tampa to spite Buddy Fuller, who he felt was brought into the state in an effort to try to control him. Roman, a long one, but a good one there from number one.
Yeah, and he did have a little crimson on his chest, like you alluded to. And just Bob Caudle, the subtlety in how he can needle the heels, you know, and he'll say something like, oh, that Dusty Rhodes sure is a good wrestler. You know, it's subtle, but it's not annoying. You know, it's not like David Crockett. When Nikita clotheslined David Crockett, I popped. You know, Crockett had that coming. But Caudle just knows how to needle the heels just enough to get a good promo out of them. And that's what happened there.
An excellent interview there from Paul Jones. After a break, we come back with a tag team match. Ken Timms and Bill White against area newcomer Bob Orton Jr. and top Paul Jones rival Jack Briscoe. During the match, Piper noted that Orton took WWF champion Bob Backlund to an hour, framing it as Backlund couldn't beat him. And this was a good competitive TV match with Timms and White getting in some solid offense, but not enough, of course. And Orton caught Timms with a big junkyard dog-like thump power slam and got the pin in under 5 minutes. It's then an all-timer when it comes to visuals. And I'm so sorry for those of you who will only be able to hear the audio of this because it doesn't do it any justice whatsoever. And I feel really sorry for all of you who only listen to these shows on YouTube because you're not going to hear this at all. It's a pre-taped interview with Roddy Piper in front of the Worldwide Wrestling backdrop, okay? He's cutting a promo on the House of Humperdinck and talks about assembling his team that he is calling Piper's Palace. First, he brings out Bob Orton Jr., and then he introduces the boogie-woogie man Jimmy Valiant. And that's when all hell breaks loose. Because in 1982, Boy from New York City was blasting when Valiant came out. So the WWE overdub of that song has got to be even louder. So Piper is screaming, this ridiculous music is playing, and, oh, by the way, did I mention that Valiant came out in a cowboy hat dancing with a steel chair? Because he did. And then from screen left comes Abdullah the Butcher tapping a 2x4 piece of wood against his head over and over and over again. And at some point during all of this, a cowboy hat ends up on Abby's head. It's just absolutely bananas. The music is so loud you can't hear Piper, and it's by far the best advertisement for the WWE Network you would ever want to see. I could be wrong, but that's how I feel. Now, as I mentioned, if you're on YouTube, you won't hear this at all, so subscribe to the podcast by visiting midatlanticpod.com. And I should also note that this is going to blend into an interview with Jack Briscoe, who's attired in his classic blue Ralph Lauren warm-up. I always like that one. And he once again comments on Mid-Atlantic champion Paul Jones and teaming up with his brother Jerry to face Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle for the NWA World Tag Team titles, but that's enough introduction. Let's get right to it.
See, James Dean ain't dead. Jesse James, he just resting. He just resting. You see, you wanted War Humperdinck. You went and you got yourself a whole batch of gorillas. You went out and got yourself Joel LeDuc. You got yourself the House of Humperdinck. Some back house there, someplace down in some wino alley. You want some competition? You've been running roughshod, been beating people all up. I'll tell you something, mister. I went and got me one Mr. Cowboy, Mr. Bob Orton. If that ain't enough, I went and got me the Boogie Woogie Man from New York. If that ain't enough, I went to Abdullah the Butcher. And if that ain't enough, brother, we're making Piper's Palace. I'm talking, we're making something big. You feel good. I feel great. I'm good on my side. Look at what I've done. Look at this man. Look at the greatest. This is the only man to beat Bob Backlund. Are you kidding me? You think he's all there?
And fans right here now at ringside, Jack Briscoe. Jack?
Well, good to be here, Bob. You know, and as usual, I'm chasing that Paul Jones. He's still got that Mid-Atlantic belt. But believe me, I'm not going to give up until I get it. I know I'm the man that can beat Paul Jones. I'd just like to get him to get in that ring right now and put the title on the line. But I know the type of man that he is, and he will refuse to do it. Also, as you know, Jerry, my brother, has joined me here in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we just saw what happened to Jay Youngblood, and we know Jay's hurt and bad shape, and of course Jerry and I feel real bad about that. But he's a good friend of ours, and Jerry and I are also interested in the World's Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, and Jerry and I are certainly looking for a chance at Kernoodle and Slaughter for that championship.
Well, I tell you, you know, and you and Jerry, when you get in that ring with them, you got to be like, you got to be on the lookout for guys like Slaughter.
We certainly do, because it's obvious those guys are out not only to defeat you, but they're out to try to hurt you. And Jerry and I know this, and we feel that we are the right tag team combination to take those World's Heavyweight Championship belts.
What a juxtaposition. Would that be the right word to use? Is Roddy Piper, Jimmy Valiant, Bob Orton Jr., Abdul the Butcher, transition into Bob Cottle standing there with Jack Briscoe, just a complete other side of the coin there, a complete 180 from what you heard at the very beginning there, Roman. If you can look, folks, if you're on Twitter at Mid-Atlantic Pod, just go on over and search for On This Day in JCP History, do a little search back to this date, November 27th, because I have this thing posted up there, I believe. And if I don't, I will when the show comes out. I'll also put it up on Facebook as well. Just a wild classic pro wrestling interview, Roman.
What a collection of misfits. You know, you got the Manic Piper going crazy, you know, and part of it is to talk over the music, you know, and then Valiant comes out goofy as ever, and the visual of Abdullah with the 2x4 while wearing a cowboy hat, and it was like the circus was in town, and then they go right to Briscoe, who sounds like he just came out of a coma. You know, I'm not sure if Briscoe went to the Rotundo School of Promos or Rotundo went to the Briscoe School of Promos, but no excitement, just real bland to go from Piper to Briscoe. What a contrast of styles.
I always like Jack Briscoe always sounded like, you know, they caught him like backstage, like Jack, like they surprised him and he just like rolled out like with a Marlboro hanging out the side of his mouth, like, I can answer this. But we go to break. When we come back, the United States heavyweight champion Greg the Hammer Valentine was in the ring and he's facing off against King Parsons, and Bob once again reminds us that Valentine's partner Ric Flair would be doing his exhibition later on, to which Piper questions both Flair and Valentine's desire to defend those championships against him. Like every time Valentine wrestled, great force was used, and the two men delivered chops and forearms and elbows to each other. Parsons was very competitive, but Valentine delivered a back suplex, followed by an elbow smash to take the victory in 5 minutes and 17 seconds. We then head back to Bob Cottle and Roddy Piper at the announce desk, where Piper cuts a classic promo on his battle with the House of Humperdinck.
With us right now at ringside here, Roddy Piper. Roddy, I tell you, don't walk away. I know you've been seeing some outstanding action in the ring. You've seen some great wrestlers. What about some that come to mind that Roddy Piper would like to meet in the ring?
Roddy Piper's been standing out here and listening to all these people take cheap shots. All these people have been taking cheap shots. Paul Jones comes up here and says, "I threw the belt into the river." That's the only way he could keep it to himself, probably, is throwing that thing into the river, man. Are you kidding me? Coming up here talking about people in Florida, because all of a sudden this thing's going nationwide and all these guys are trying to take cheap shots. And so what they do is they call me and they say, all of a sudden Slaughter starts to worry and everybody starts worrying because I bring in some maniac called Abdullah the Bitch that all he wants to do is run head on into freight trains, eat chicken livers, and fight. Raw chicken livers. Yeah. Yeah. See, what you got, if you want to fight outlaws, you got to have outlaws to fight outlaws. Now, like, I ain't the fairest person in the world, but then again, look at what I'm fighting. Talking about Joe LeDuc, talking about the House of Humperdinck. What's that? That's a back house in some wino's alley. That's what the House of Humperdinck is. He's got all these guys out here. That ain't nothing. I'm talking Bob Orton Jr. I'm talking Jack Briscoe. I'm talking Abdullah the Butcher. I'm talking about getting all these people together. I'm talking about the Boogie Woogie Man himself, a New York City street fighter, somebody who is not afraid to stick your thumbs in your eyes. If that's the way you want to play, then that's the way we're going to have to play. I can stand out here and you can insult me all day. I can insult you all day, but let's quit the insults and start to do a little fighting. What we'll do is we'll have the Piper's Palace and we'll have the House of Humperdinck, huh? We'll get us a war going. Is that what you want to do? Is that what you want to do with fight? You got guys like Cowboy Bob Orton. You don't see him in here. You don't see him kissing babies. You ribbon me. No, you don't see none of that, huh? You don't see him on the good ship Lollipop. You don't see him doing none of that stuff, because we come here to fight. We come here to clean up a problem. So that's why they got me back.
And that problem, as you say, you put it all together, I think, very succinctly. The House of Humperdinck, that's the problem, right?
Well, Humperdinck, you see, have you ever been in high school? And when you're in high school, there's two big guys and there's some little squirt there always agitating and wanting these two big guys to fight. And while they're fighting, he's over there eating Krispy Kreme donuts. That's Humperdinck. Simple as that, man. So if he wants to do that, all he's got to do, if he's really that tough, all he's got to do is get his little buns right there about that W right there, Jack. And we'll just see how good you do. We'll just see how much Rod you can handle, Mr. Humperdinck.
All right, fans, and there you have it. That's a story from Roddy Piper.
Krispy Kreme donuts, still not nationwide at this point, but a nice plug from them, from Roddy Piper. They are fired up talking about Sir Oliver Humperdinck and his House of Humperdinck. But there was a reason Piper was fired up, because after a break, it's time for Ric Flair's public workout, and Flair gets into the ring and takes both Keith Larson and Ron Ritchie on using amateur-style techniques. He quickly pinned Larson, and then he dispatched Ritchie. And once he did, Flair popped up. He apologized to the crowd for having such an easy competition. got out of the ring, started over to the desk. Once again, he apologized for a lack of competition. And then he tells Piper that it's just too bad that he's not up to the task and pinches him on the cheek like he was a little kid. And Piper, of course, immediately rips his dress shirt off and storms into the ring. To his credit, Flair follows him in, and the two start to go at it. First with Flair in the down position by his choice, and then the second time with Flair starting on top. Flair, whose old gig marks on his forehead would open back up during the workout, which was something. And here's where we're going to pick up the audio. As Piper left the ring saying that he had nothing else to prove when Flair wanted to bait him back in again to try to get some revenge, and this would lead to Greg Valentine coming out and doom for Roddy Piper.
No escape there by the world champion. Okay, now it's Piper down and Flair up. As Flair says, I'm up, you're down. And here is Roddy Piper, drops down on the knees.
Come on, Roddy. That's good. A little more fight than I thought he had in him.
All right, and Flair says he had... He showed a little
this
more fight than he thought he had
when
in
I
him.
Pin him, you count, okay, brother?
You count.
All right, and Flair now telling the referee to count when he pins Roddy Piper. Here is Piper now, spinning, turning, twisting, sitting, trying to come out, rolling, turning. He almost escaped, and he does. And the crowd loves it. Piper on his feet with the escape. All right, and now Flair again saying, turn it down. One more time, he said. All right, telling Roddy Piper, down on the mat again, and so Piper again is going to drop down to his knees. Ric Flair again. Oh, and he kicks Piper right in the rib. Piper down on his knees is ready for Flair, and Flair kicks him, now chops him over the rope. Neckbreaker by Piper. Piper, who put that neckbreaker on Flair, coming off of the ropes and pinned him.
I beat you pro. I beat you amateur. I beat you pro. What else you want me? Well, arm wrestle? You ain't nothing, man. World champion. Why don't you sign a contract with me?
Well, Roddy Piper said he beat him. Piper said he beat you amateur.
Wait a minute. Come here.
Nobody does that to Ric Flair. I won't let it go. Come on. I won't let it go. You heard me right. Come on, Daddy. I won't let it run at it. Come on. In the ring. Let's go. Telling you right now, in the ring. Come on.
All right. He wants another go in the ring. You go.
I proved myself. I beat him professional. I beat him amateur. I got nothing.
And here is Greg Valentine from behind. Valentine and Flair now both attack Piper. They've got him down on the floor as Valentine sneaked in, caught him from behind. Richie and Keith Larson come over, and Valentine floors in. And Piper's still down now on the floor, having his head rubbed right in the floor now by Ric Flair. The elbow now, the elbow again. Again, here is Ron Ritchie trying to help him out. Ritchie being thrown away by Flair. Valentine again with Piper on the floor, rubbing his face in it. What a wild and woolly finish this is going to be right here, fans. Piper, who said he beat Flair amateur, and he did. He beat him pro. He beat him every way. Worked over and mauled now by Flair and by Valentine, who came in to give the champ some help. And Larson and Richie are both helpless to stop him. Still Piper now, with his face being rubbed and dragged across that mat. They're trying to put that mat burn across the face and the cheek of Piper. Here comes Bob Orton Jr. Flair now waiting on him. As Orton jumps into the ring and a right and left fly. Richie finally in. Orton has got a boot after Valentine. And here comes Paul Jones. Paul, we got mayhem in that ring right now, and I don't know how you're going to ever stop him. It's going to take an army to get law and order back in that ring right now.
And there you heard it, reliving a classic Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling moment from 4 years prior between Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. Flair and Greg Valentine attack Roddy Piper and grind his face into the concrete, brutalizing him until Bob Orton, in his tight white underwear, his boots unzipped, and no socks on, came out to tilt the scale. Roman, they would do this again with Ricky Morton in 1986. They would do this again, Barry Windham and Ric Flair, in January of 1989 during the heat up for Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. So there it is with Roddy Piper. This one may get forgotten about in the annals of Ric Flair attacks, probably the least famous because just really wasn't that widely available. A lot of people think about the Ric Flair Roddy Piper feud from 78, or I guess not 78, from what, 80, when Roddy Piper first came in. So it's interesting. It's very, very interesting that this was so well played, and as we're going to find out over the next couple of weeks, it was so well done, and Piper is so great as somebody who has, you know, been put down and mashed down by Valentine and Flair, these two uppity champions, these two guys with silver spoons in their mouth, and he's always been the tough kid, and how this whole thing is played. I mean, it really is a classic, and more I think about it, I don't know if this whole situation here really gets it to do, and it starts right here on this episode.
The show is definitely so much better when Piper's involved. I mean, not only wrestling, not only the angles, but on commentary, and something he said during the Valentine Iceman Parsons match, which I cracked me up because he said it so subtly. He says the only thing that stopped Parsons from going to college was high school. I popped for that. I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, the Flair workout against the enhancement workers, those of you that collect videotapes, DVDs, whenever Flair has a workout, it normally doesn't go too well for him. And Piper got the advantage, you know, and Flair comes up bloody, and Flair kicks Piper, you know, doing a heel move, kicking him in the ribs. And then Piper scored a pinfall. Piper pinned Ric Flair, the world heavyweight champion. So that was excitement right there. The crowd went nuts for that. And then the aftermath of Valentine jumping him. And what a great thing to see the heels, not only Flair grind Piper's face into the concrete, but then Valentine do it on the concrete. And then Valentine do it again in the ring. And of course, you know, Piper and Valentine had a legendary feud, which culminated at the Starrcade 83, the dog collar match. But just so much excitement with everything going on here, and it was incredible to see it unfold.
Absolutely. That feud with Valentine begins right here, because obviously Flair, being the NWA touring champion, would be gone again, and Greg Valentine, the United States heavyweight champion, holds the top title in the territory, and he's got Roddy Piper, who his face still laying on the floor of the studio, and we'll see the evolution of how that heals over the next coming weeks. But Paul Jones then came out to join Bob to fill a little bit of time and calm things down after all of that. And he talks about what Flair did to Piper until Flair himself came over to the podium alongside Valentine. Flair starts in on Piper, and before he's distracted by the sight of David Crockett off camera, and he goes after him, and then he gets back on track. And before long, we got a trio of champions who's joined by another champion, Sergeant Bob Slaughter, who states an undeniable fact, at least to me, when speaking about Jim Crockett Promotions.
Here's the world champ.
You.
And I tell you,
you're not qualified. Being from the state of North Carolina, you're not qualified to tell me, or number one Paul Jones, or the Hammer, or one half of the world tag team champion, Sergeant Slaughter. You're not. What do you want? You get out of here, too. I make as much money as you make. You don't tell me nothing either. I don't care if you got $5 million, I got $6 million. You don't tell me nothing.
What we just did, Bob Connell.
You try to embarrass me.
Rick Flair is telling David Crockett off he deserves it. Everybody saw what happened. Roddy Piper is finally paying some dues. I've had to pay dues for a long time. So has my partner, Rick Flair. But Roddy Piper paid the price right here. He gets out here on national TV and tells everybody that he's going to run Flair myself off, run Slaughter off, run Humperdinck off, bring in his own army. Abdullah the Butcher, Bob Orton Jr. Well, we just showed you who rules the roost around here. You understand? Where's Piper? Where's Orton now?
Play that film again. Let's show all these people again one time what happens to someone that thinks they can walk into the promised land that is owned, operated, and promoted by the four of us. You understand that?
Let's see if we can do that. I'm going to tell you something.
You know, I didn't get the idea until Valentine hollered out, let's do the same thing we did to a punk a couple of years ago, and I'm talking about Ricky Steamboat. We took Steamboat about 4 years ago and ran him around this concrete floor like a mop. And I'll guarantee you, you don't see Piper out here yelling and screaming. You know why? Because he's back there. I'm just sorry none of these fat women had a chance to see it. He's back there putting his face back together. If you think that's a picnic, having your face rubbing a cement floor, brother, you're dead wrong. I don't mind telling you, Piper, you said it yourself. It's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And you're talking about Valiant being a hell of a street fighter and how tough he is. You got four men out here right now, brother, that can walk anywhere in any town in the world. Anywhere in any town in the world and hold their head high. And nobody even says boo.
He sure did look like a filet mignon, man. He looked more like back to pork and beans.
You know, being a sergeant in the Marine Corps, I've seen this happen before. And I guess what you'd have to do is say that Valentine, Flair, Jones, and Slaughter have declared war. We declared war on North Carolina and the wrestlers around who think they're so great. Now, I just saw something that happened at boot camp. I just wish it would have been me. I wish I would have been a part of it. But I have to say that I have to congratulate
you for doing
that. Let's not forget, you did your part.
That's right.
You took the guy that mistake for a pool cue once in a while when they're chalking his head, Jay Youngblood, and put him back on a reservation. Right. And I'll guarantee you right now, the only thing that Youngblood's putting his head on right now is his mama's bosom because he's crying all night long.
Hey, Briscoe's probably packing his bag, because Briscoe, you're next.
You know, I can just see Roddy Piper's face right in the mirror right now. It's going to look like a piece of sandpaper rubbed all over his face. That's what it's going to look like. You know, you talk about Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat. I don't want to get off the subject of somebody like Roddy Piper and his face being scratched up. And also, you guys don't know who's in there, but Bob Orton, I think, deserves a little lesson, too. But I like to say about Jay Youngblood and
probably already packed his bag.
We know.
Did you take some names?
Orton walked in here.
He took some names.
And Orton wants to be part of it. He wants to be a big deal. Now, Orton, let's face it, tremendous wrestler, tremendous reputation. But this isn't New York, and this isn't Atlanta, and this isn't Kansas City. This is the Carolinas.
That's right.
And let's look at four men that come out of the Carolinas. We know what's happening, and we don't let nobody come into the promised land unless we want them in. Bob Orton, this isn't Bob Backlund. This ain't Pedro Morales or Jimmy Snuka. You got the world's greatest. If you're anybody, if you're a wrestler of any sort, you have to be in North Carolina wrestling for the Mid-Atlantic. You don't wrestle anywhere else. This is where the most money is made. This is where it all happens. You just saw a taste of what can happen when one man gets out of line. Can you imagine when all of us get on top of somebody like Orton, Piper, Youngblood, Briscoe?
Hallelujah, Sergeant Slaughter. There is no better place in the country where the top competition is and the most money that can be made than in North Carolina, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and it's all hot right now, Roman. I mean, you know, Paul Jones tried there. And for as much fun as I would make about Paul Jones on the mic, he's just being overshadowed by, you know, classics there. You know, Valentine, he can back off. Flair and Slaughter were fantastic. Roddy Piper, this entire show. Steamboat and Youngblood against Slaughter and Carnoodle is red hot. We have this going on. We have the House of Humperdinck stuff. We have Jimmy Valiant, who, you know, has not been around much. He is still looming to jump back in with Joe LaDuke. There is just the hot thing after hot thing happening right now. And for as maligned as Dory Funk's Jr.'s 1984 booking is, as we're going it to the end of 1982 into 1983, boy, things are good right now in Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, what a great closing segment with that collaboration of talent with Flair, Valentine, Slaughter, and just to see them all together, the promos they were cutting. And, you know, as far as this episode, there were a few things that I liked that, to me as a fan, I enjoyed. And it's when they acknowledge the past, you know, like Paul Jones had acknowledged what happened in Florida. Flair had acknowledged that they roughed up Steamboat 4 years prior to that. And, you know, when Piper on commentary saying that Backlund could not beat Orton, you know, when they acknowledge other stuff outside of the area a little bit, I think that that's good, you know, as a fan to hear. And just Slaughter said something in there that I thought was interesting when he said Piper's face looked like somebody had put sandpaper to it. And for those of you that had read Piper's book, I believe it was Harley Race that he referenced in there that rubbed sandpaper on Piper's face to make it look really bad, you know, after he got roughed up, and then told him, go out there and cut a promo. So when Slaughter said the sandpaper thing, I was like, that was kind of a cool flashback for me about reading about that in the Piper book.
Yeah, I can't remember if he wrote it, if it was Race, but certainly Gene Anderson was the pro at this. He was the guy when any time when Flair got busted up or Steamboat or Morton, I think, too, was another one that got the Gene Anderson treatment of the sandpaper and a iodine, I think, for a little bit for the color there, brings out the purple and all that. So it's just a nasty, nasty looking wound will appear on Roddy Piper. We can promise you that. But Justin, this was an excellent show, Roman. And I don't know what other thoughts you have, if there's anything else you want to say about it. But I just thought this was a knockdown, drag out, great show.
I agree 100%. This was a fun show. And those of you that have access to the Peacock Network, I would highly recommend watching this, going out of your way to watch it. There was just so much excitement. Mike and I did our best to try to capture what happened, but there's nothing like actually seeing it come to life by watching it on TV.
Yeah, you know, it was heavy on the interviews and the segments there. And usually I don't like doing that because there is no visual there and there's only, you know, so much you can gain sometimes from somebody talking over a VTR or a long segment where, you know, you can only imagine what's happening. But in these situations, it's good to want to imagine what's happening because everything going on is very descriptive, and it's just I thought this was an excellent show. You throw in Parsons and Valentine, you throw in...
The Fucci match was a good match, even though that was only 3 minutes. That was a good match.
A winner of a day for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and going forward, Roman. So any bows you want to put on anything before I get to the results from Worldwide?
I can't wait to keep watching the next episode and the episode after that. They are doing some great stuff in the Mid-Atlantic area.
Now, if you're able to turn the channel somehow to Worldwide Wrestling, what you would see would be Jack Briscoe defeating Ken Timms, Paul Jones defeating King Parsons, Mike Rotundo defeating Bill White, and Bob Orton Jr. defeating Masa Fuji. And I'm sure a whole lot of talk about what was taped right before they were taped in the studios of WPCQ between Rowdy Roddy Piper, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and Greg the Hammer Valentine. So it's now time to take a look at the events coming up in your area.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic wrestling events coming up in your area.
We start our trip around the circuit on Thursday, November 25th, Thanksgiving night, Greensboro Coliseum. The last year of running traditional Thanksgiving night shows. Obviously, in 1983, the concept of Starrcade would come along and change everything, not only for Jim Crockett Promotions, but the rest of the sport as well. The newspapers reported 15,498 fans in the building, and the eight-match show went like this. Mike Davis opened up by defeating Masafuchi. Johnny Weaver then went on to defeat Ken Timms. Frank Monty defeated Rotten Richie. Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. defeated Private Nelson. Then there was a 20-man battle royal for the vacant NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Championship. The match came down to Bad Bad Leroy Brown and Sweet Brown Sugar. They had a match, and Bad Bad Leroy Brown took home the belt in about 21 minutes. Jack Briscoe, substituting for Wahoo McDaniel, pinned United States champion Greg Valentine with a cradle in 23 minutes, but didn't take home the title as he was the replacement. NWA World Champion Ric Flair defeated Roddy Piper in 24 minutes by disqualification. And in the main event, Jimmy Valiant and Abdullah the Butcher defeated Paul Jones, Joe LeDuc, and their manager, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, in a 3-on-2 handicap match inside of a 10-foot-high steel cage when Valiant forced Humperdinck to submit to a crab hold in 21 minutes. And there was no rest for the weary, as Friday night there were two shows. Charleston County Hall, Jimmy Valiant and Abdullah the Butcher faced off against Joe LeDuc, Paul Jones, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck in a handicap steel cage match. And Sweet Brown Sugar and Pork Chop Cash faced off against Private Nelson and Bill White. Meanwhile, over at the Coliseum in Richmond, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle defeated Jack and Jerry Briscoe, Dusty Rhodes defeated Leroy Brown in a bull rope match, and Roddy Piper and Bob Orton Jr. defeated Ric Flair and Greg Valentine by countout. On Saturday, November 27th, in Norfolk at the Scope, Paul Jones defeated Sweet Brown Sugar, Bob Orton Jr. defeated Greg Valentine, and Jimmy Valiant and Abdullah the Butcher defeated Leroy Brown, Joe LeDuc, and Oliver Humperdinck in a handicap match. Also on Saturday in Greenville, South Carolina, Memorial Auditorium, a special show on Saturday, as Greenville is usually a Monday night venue every single week, but with Thanksgiving taking place, things got shifted around a little bit. They saw Porkchop Cash and King Parsons defeat Private Nelson and Bill White, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle defeat the Briscoes, and NWA World Champion Ric Flair defeat Roddy Piper by disqualification. Sunday night, the 28th in Charlotte at the Coliseum, Jack Briscoe knocked off Paul Jones to win the NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship in a no-DQ match. Also, Ric Flair battled Jimmy Valiant to a double disqualification. Bob Orton Jr. defeated Greg Valentine. Roddy Piper and Abdullah the Butcher defeated Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle, but didn't win the titles. Sweet Brown Sugar defeated Leroy Brown by countout, and Joe LeDuc defeated Jerry Briscoe. We skip ahead to Tuesday, Columbia, South Carolina, Township Auditorium. Jack Briscoe defeated Paul Jones. Joe LeDuc and Gene Anderson defeated Jerry Briscoe and Johnny Weaver. Private Nelson and Bill White defeated King Parsons and Porkchop Cash. Also on Tuesday night in Raleigh at the Civic Center, Greg Valentine defeated Bob Orton Jr., and Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle defeated Jimmy Valiant and Sweet Brown Sugar by countout. That takes us back around to Wednesday, December 1st, Charlotte, North Carolina, WPCQ Studios, and this is the WWE Network preview for next week's show. December 4th, 1982, Paul Jones aligns with Joe LeDuc and Gene Anderson in a six-man tag team match main event. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and would like to connect with it more, I invite you to follow us across our many forms of social media, especially on our Twitter. Just search at MidAtlanticPod. We would also really appreciate you following us on YouTube, youtube.com/MidAtlanticPod. Full and truncated podcasts, plus great audio and video clips from the rich history of the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Territory and Jim Crockett Promotions. That's youtube.com/MidAtlanticPod. I also invite you to support all the programs and content here on the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving the history of professional wrestling. And I'm proud that this show, produced by me, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us home, Bob DeBartolaven and Uncle Bob Cottle.
Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling has been furnished to this station for broadcast at this time by Jim Crockett Promotions in exchange for commercial consideration. Fans, next week on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Bobo Brazil and the Mighty Igor against Charlie Fulton and Tony Russo. Mr. Wrestling will take on Larry Sharp, Paul Jones and Wahoo McDaniel against Kim Duck and Ricky Ferrara, Superstar and the Russian Stomper against Francisco Flores and Steve Kovacs, and Blackjack Mulligan will take on Phil Mercado all next week.